Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Jerry's Pearls Podcast. My name is Cookie, and today I have Aunt Jerry with me per the usual. How you doing, Aunt Jerry?
Cookie, today I am feeling especially blessed and thankful. Thank you for asking.
It's wonderful
to hear.
You're
doing okay?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for asking. I'm glad you're feeling especially blessed today. You look good.
Thank you, girl.
You look real good.
You know, I do think I'm cute, so thank you for the affirmation.
You ain't got to think it. You know you're cute. I know you're cute. We all know that you are cute.
And you are absolutely beautiful as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Today, we want to get into, what does womanhood look like for you?
That's layered for me.
Okay.
Womanhood, I think each person, depending on our background, how we were raised, what was modeled in front of us, womanhood looks different for all of us. For me, womanhood, the model for me was my mother, Miss Hattie. You know, she, everything I aspired to be, I saw in her as a woman, a wife, and a mother. And the thing for me was her faith, but just being able to, the way she managed the household, the way she loved us, the way she cared for my dad, the way she was responsible with her job, and how she acted in the church and community, all of those things, you know, we saw, my sister and I saw in me. Our brothers were there, but of course, we, the girls, were looking at how mom was doing it. If you can operate on all levels, never lose yourself, but operate on all levels to maintain the home, the job, yourself. Now, sometimes we get lost in there, so sometimes you got to do a little course correction to make sure you take care of yourself. But I think over the years, what I've noticed is that it's shifted and it's changed. Mm-hmm. And you have to be, you know, you can have it all. You know, when we started that, you can have it all. I think that is when a lot of things shifted. You can have a successful career. You can have, you know, the three kids and the white picket fence and the husband and the self-care. And somewhere we kind of, I think, lost our way, some people. And because life is unpredictable and different things happen, some women have had to step into a totally independent role because they were the only ones there to do it. And they had to make sure their family and their kids and everybody was okay.
Yeah.
But for me, femininity is, it's kind of a blend of all of that because you have to have some facets of that. To stand in womanhood, you got to know how to navigate through different things, through business and finances and, you know, school things and school plays and teachers and meetings. We all come from such different backgrounds. And some people have never seen what my mother modeled for us. So they're looking at it differently. So that, to me, is kind of a complex. I can't give you a one straight answer.
Okay.
That's kind of response.
That's cool. That's cool. Nothing wrong with that. It was there a time that you felt like you stepped into your womanhood? Like when you had children, you were married. But any time before that, did you feel like you were the woman? Like you were in your womanhood?
Well, there was a moment as a teenager, I lost my mind and confronted my mother in a way.
I'm so glad you're still here.
That said, you know, she told me to do something and I told her I wasn't doing it. And after I picked myself up off the floor, you know, where she had put me, she made sure I understood there was only one woman in the house and I was looking at her. So, but all jokes aside, when I left home and went to work in the Washington, D.C. area. And I had never been away from home alone. I'm from rural North Carolina, and I'm now in a metropolis. And it was really culture shock for me. But I learned, I had good mentors, and I learned how to navigate that. And didn't get it right all the time. Made some terrible mistakes, made some bad decisions. Had to, you know, even call mama and say, I want to come home. You know, and she wouldn't allow it. And I'm so grateful that she didn't. And years later, she told me she didn't allow it because she thought I would feel like I was a failure, that I would never step into it. And then I never would have known the womanhood that I could grow into and aspire to and develop on my own.
Yeah. They always know what we need.
They do.
Even when we don't.
Even when we don't know. I didn't let me talk to my daddy. Because when I said I wanted to come home, I know if I talked to daddy. They would let me come home. But mama never gave him the phone. And I'm so glad that she did at this point in my life as the way God has directed my life.
Yeah, my mom is the person who taught me to be as independent as I am. And this is in a situation where she's married. She has myself and then she has my sister as well. But there was some sort of, I don't even know how to explain it. There was always just a separation with the things that she taught me. And I am exceptionally grateful that she did teach me a lot of the things that she did, because it does help me now.
Right.
I feel like I probably gained or felt like I was a woman maybe a little bit after she passed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit after she passed, because life became like a reality. It was a big reality, a big shift. Right. And responsibilities and things like that. So I probably stepped into my womanhood then. That was in my mid-20s.
Well, from what I can see, Mama did good.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
I'll be sure to pray and tell her that. What was your hardest struggle or your hardest battle?
The hardest thing was adjusting to being a single mother after being married and having a partner to do some of the things that now fell totally on me to do. And one of the things that sticks out for me is I hated taking my sons to the barbershop because their dad used to do that. Mm. And I just felt like I was on display, and there's a conversation. I don't know if you've ever been in a barbershop, but there's a different language that men speak in a barbershop. And it was just uncomfortable. But I got with a barber that, you know, we could set a time and it really wasn't that crowded. So it was okay. So kind of that, and having to step into doing everything. And the greatest challenge for me after becoming a single mother with two sons is so many times it got so hard. I just wanted to give up. I just wanted to quit. But the fact that I had two sons dependent on me, I couldn't quit. Now, I would lay down and cry for hours. You know, I'd roll on the floor. I'd cry out to God. I'd be mad at God. I'd be mad at everybody. But then I'd pick myself up, take a shower, get dressed, and we're back into the routine the next day. And it's remembering the hard times from my mother, tapping into that, the faith that mama never quit, no matter what. We could always count on mama to have an answer, a response, or a solution to help us. And so I kind of tapped into that. So I think your circle of support is very critical.
Support is critical. It absolutely is. Now, several times now, you have mentioned being a Titus II woman. Not sure if everybody picked up on that reference or not. We're not all Bible scholars, but do you mind letting us know what you meant by being a Titus II woman?
Sure. Being a Titus II woman, I consider it to be an honor and a privilege that God has allowed me to get to this season in my life and to have some life experiences. The Titus II woman in the Bible, it's the older women in the church who help mentor the younger women in how to be a godly woman.
Okay.
How to be a good mother, how to be a good wife, how to, you know, operate in your community and your church, and you follow biblical principles, you know, to do that. So I'm gonna get y'all, but I'm gonna get you with love, you know, but that I feel like that's my responsibility, because, you know, how do you know if someone, you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes you just simply need just a little tap to say, we're going to redirect just a little bit and we'll be right on course, you know, to do what it is God has for you to do.
Hey, I do believe you will get us together.
Yes.
That is very fitting of you. Yes, ma'am.
Yep. I love you, ladies.
I
even
love
the ones
you.
I haven't met yet. I love all of you because I believe that you all are assigned to my life and that God would allow me to speak into your life. You know, I am very, very grateful.
We're grateful for you as well. Support is important. What does support look like for you?
For me, personally, support is situation dependent. For me, that's what I've seen. But overall, I would say when you say support, someone that you can call at a moment's notice, and you don't have to give them the whole backstory of why you need them. They just respond.
Okay.
You know, and then we can get to the backstory later if it's necessary. But someone who, you know, can be your, you know, speed dial. And they're there.
Right.
And it's you can do, they can count on you for the same thing, you know, but support to me is, it's sometimes I don't feel like cooking. And if somebody just brings over a meal for the family, you know, if they know that I'm, because at one point in my life, I was working three jobs, you know, trying to take care of me and my sons. And so we weren't eating healthy. It wasn't, you know, it was just, I was hanging on by a thread. And at one point when I was at a very low season in my life and we didn't have housing and my car had been repossessed and I was trying to figure out what to do, I had a neighbor that said, just bring my youngest son, John, just bring John here. I'll get John to school. You don't worry about that. I'll make sure John is fit, all of that.
Okay.
So I think it's situation dependent for me, but you in that support circle, you have to identify, and you have to be honest with yourself.
Right.
Now, I don't know if Jackie volunteered, because I think Jackie could see me falling apart, the young lady, my friend who took my son.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you have to say, you just have to say help. And we can't let pride stop us from saying I need help. I often, when I was in the military, I told my troops and the young people and the people in my life that God has privileged me to mentor, you don't ask for help because you're weak. You ask for help to remain strong. So I think you first have to be honest about where you are and have no pride. Listen, I'm so over pride. Thank you, Jesus. I am so over being ashamed or feeling some kind of way, because we only share with people what we're comfortable sharing, hoping that what we share won't change how they view us and see us and decrease our value in them. And people who trust me with those type of transparency moments, they go up, in my opinion,
okay,
for me, because it takes a lot.
It does.
And I thank God that there's a trust factor that they've seen in me. And, you know, the word says, try the spirit, by the spirit. Hope it's the spirit of Christ, because, you know, my other spirit, that girl is crazy. So we thank God for the spirit of Christ. But I think that, you know, to know when you need help. And then the other side, you know, we were going to shift some. I had friends who would tell me, you are running on fumes. And we have to learn about self-care. We have to learn how to take care of ourselves, how to stop and to rest and say, I just can't do this. And sometimes your kids may have to eat hamburger helper or whatever.
Ain't nothing wrong with it.
We get ready for the next day. You know, you have to kind of know your own limits. But it was hard not to get to the breaking point, because a lot of times I felt like I just couldn't do it anymore, But then there was that fresh wind of faith, or somebody would say, I don't know how you do it, but I got your back. So that kind of gives you, that's like the wind beneath your wings,
okay,
to keep you going.
And so what did you do to recover? You mentioned self-care. How did you take care of yourself when you had those opportunities? What did that look like? Read a book, take a nap,
actually,
get your nails done, your hair done.
I used to sew a lot. I used to make most of my clothes. And so mom taught both my sister and I to sew. Back in the day when they had home economics in school, you know, we had a wonderful teacher named Miss Inez Jones who did it. She was a wonderful seamstress. But I would spend out during the time that I was married, when my husband would say, I got the boys on Saturday, I would spend hours in a fabric store looking at patterns, because I'd like to take different patterns and make an outfit. I'd take the top for one dress and the bottom for another, or the jacket from one thing, or sleeves are different. And that was just relaxing, because when you're sewing, you're creative. When you're creating, you have to be focused on what you're doing, or it would be a hot mess. Because if you sewed anything for Miss Jones and one stitch was out of line, she made you take the whole. Now, you couldn't just take the portion out where the stitch was out. You had to take the whole seam out.
Yes.
And I think that's a good analogy for life. But sometimes we have a misalignment in the stitching of life, this tapestry of life.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you got to rip the whole thing out.
Oh, yes.
And ripping the whole thing out may mean just go take a nap for that self-care. Ooh. Just lay down. Just breathe. Or I like to sit by water. I like the sound of the water.
Me too.
That's very, very relaxing.
I love that.
But you have to know what it does. But you have to be intentional also. And you must do it without guilt. That's what's been the Achilles heel for so many of us, is that I'm being selfish, you know. But I've used the analogy, and I've spoken to, you know, several people in my life who I have high respect for. And we are the tent pole. You know, the tent pole, I think about a circus tent. You know, that pole is holding up everything.
It
is. If that pole comes down, everything implodes. So we, as the women, the woman in the family most often is the tent pole. And so if we collapse, you know how much work it is to put all that stuff back together rather than just take a nap?
Yes, so, ma'am.
So let's just do that.
Okay. That makes sense, because we do feel like that we have to be strong. You mentioned pride, but pride does get in the way with a lot of people for asking for help whenever the help is needed. So. Yeah, I
think, and the strong black woman theory and space that we've been in for many, many years, I think it has positives and negatives depending on how you look at it. Strong, we're not strong black women because we want to be. Oftentimes, it was a default, had no other choice because it had to get done because there was nobody else to get it done but us. But I think sometimes we went too far to the left of that to then we feel like we have to prove something because we're not, it's this stuff in us as women and these emotions and these hormones and stuff that you got to do this and this to be considered that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can all get to the place of just knowing that we are fearfully and wonderfully made and that there's nobody can be a better you than you and find someone who helps support that. But the other thing is make sure you find somebody who checks you when your stuff is out of order.
That's what's needed. A lot of people can't accept that. That's difficult.
When your stuff is out of order.
That's difficult for some people.
Get the balance.
But that definitely does balance mm-hmm. out you as a person, as an individual. Mm-hmm. I agree. So that brings us to our next segment, which is Ask Aunt Jerry. And don't forget, you can ask Aunt Jerry as well by sending an email to askauntjerry@gmail.com. Again, that's askauntjerry@gmail.com. If we don't respond to you via the podcast, then we'll definitely respond to you in private.
We'll get back to you.
Yes, we will. Yeah. Our question for today, it says, "Hi, Aunt Jerry. I am 26 years old. I developed physically very early. Since I was 13, men have always propositioned me. I did not like that at all. I have always tried to be modest and cover myself. I like to wear jeans and a t-shirt. I can't stand heels or tight-fitting clothes. On top of all of that, my mother worked so much that I never learned how to dress, do makeup, or any typical girl stuff. But now I find that people ignore me, especially men. But I like my sweats and being casual and don't want to put my body parts on display just to get a man or to be accepted by other women. How do I find the power of my femininity without looking like a stripper? Sign, staying off the pole."
Staying off the pole. Commend you for staying off the pole, first off. Let's go there. That is comfort, femininity. We're going to find the right balance here, modesty. And I'm just so glad to hear this young lady say that she wants to be modest. She doesn't want to look like a stripper on a pole. And God bless mama for working and taking care and providing them. But she has to find what will make her comfortable and still feel feminine. You know, they got some really nice casuals, you know, sport, athletic stuff, you know, and there's a YouTube for everything. I'm sure there's a YouTube for makeup, you know, but there's a girlfriend somewhere, you know, someone that she admires, someone that she can trust. We don't want her to encounter someone and say, "Girl, you ought to know how to do this." Well, no, if she knew how, she wouldn't be asked for help, you know, but I think for her, there is a way you can dress very feminine and be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't have to have 3-inch heels and, you know, and eyelashes that look like, you know, dragonflies or whatever, or spiders or whatever. So you don't have to do all of that. If you like that type of accessory and it makes you feel better about yourself, I'm all for it. But you can't let someone else determine what makes you feel good about yourself. So I think if she just tries some things, you know, you can do some things. I don't understand why everybody takes selfies in the bathroom, but I guess, you know, it seems like every selfie is in the bathroom.
It's the lighting.
Okay, get a lamp you can move around the house. You know, but I think that if she just, you know, does some self-discovery, you know, with some different styles and see what really works for her.
Thank you, Aunt Jerry.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But what stuck out to me was her saying she was being propositioned at the age of 13, feeling just uncomfortable because she felt
right.
like her body was on display. How do you think that affected her evolving into her femininity?
I think I can only imagine it must have had a tremendous impact on her and feeling that because she had no control over when her body developed, you know, that's how it is when you're developing. And, not to know how to navigate that at 13. Some women at 33, 43 don't know how to navigate that, but I can only imagine someone that young and tender. It had to have an effect. Like if I can't control how my body is developed, but I can cover it up so it's not on display. Mm-hmm. And so maybe some of this, it will deflect the unwanted attention. Mm-hmm. you know, because I'm sure she had to feel violated in some way, you know, and with her mother working diligently, trying to make sure it's providing whatnot, and maybe there wasn't the space or time for her to express to mom, you know, how she felt. So her default was, if I just don't look attractive, then they'll leave me alone, perhaps. Maybe that's a part of it, to help her to understand it was not her fault. There was nothing she did wrong. Her body developed as body, I mean, all young women develop at different times, you know, but hopefully if she can get to that point to understand that it's okay to accentuate some of the things, there's a way to be proud of, you know, your body and feel good about your body without feeling like you're on display or that's your piece of meat or that you're being violated. And that you're not making a statement like, look at me, I'm going to reveal everything so I get all this attention. Actually, I think women get more attention when you don't reveal everything, the right kind of attention.
Now we're going into our pop session, which is Pearl of Praise.
Okay.
Today we've been talking about femininity and womanhood. Mm-hmm. Who's popping? Who fits that criteria for you today?
Former First Lady Michelle Obama. I think she really personifies femininity. And, you know, we could do a cross section of things, a strong Black woman, femininity. She had her own very successful career, you know, prior to marrying the former President Obama. And she was her own person in her own right, doing things in her own career. And I think the transition to support him in his political career and the things that she really wasn't comfortable with, but that mattered to him, and because they mattered to him, she signed on to it and came alongside to become a wonderful partner in the success for him, first running as a senator, you know, in Illinois, and then to go on into the presidency. She wasn't really into politics, but because she stood in that place of her own femininity, I think, and her own strength, that she was able to support him and not feel that it cost her anything or she lost anything. And I think the way she transitioned into the White House as the first ever Black, you know, African-American president and first lady, she did it with such grace and style and commitment and integrity that she deserves our Pearl of Praise today.
Thank you, Aunt Jerry. I do agree that Michelle Obama is popping.
All right.
And that closes us out for today. Thank you for speaking on femininity today. You have any closing thoughts?
Thank you, Cookie. I thank everyone for joining us. I hope that you have found this time that you spent with us to be enjoyable and hopefully informational. And we hope we brought a smile to your face. So we look forward to talking with you and seeing you next time.